We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on bluechipspeakersnava.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. Wow, I am so glad to see Mac. Mac came through Gainesville. He's a professional that supports an industry that's up there in Gainesville. And he was just all tore up. We sat down, and the man kept me sober for about 2 hours. That was about 6 months ago. And he made a commitment to come and tell his story. And here he is from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, a man who lives up to his promises. Welcome, Mac.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Mac McShee, and I am an alcoholic.
Yeah, Tim says I kept him sober. Really, he helped keep me sober. I got a teenage son who, man, I'll tell you, we had a tough situation. On my trip down, my son told me that A has done absolutely nothing for me and that it was all a farce, as he gave me a black eye, put my head through a wall, and tried to stab me with a knife. That was pretty hard to take, and his mom was involved in that, you know, them against me. And I did what I was taught. I went and sought you guys out and shared it. And you guys said I would get through it, because you've gotten through it. And you were right, I did. And just a real quick story, my son totaled his Jeep. You know the first person he called? Me. How about that? He calls me Dad again. And we are tighter now than ever. You asked me that 6 months ago. I couldn't see that, but I believed it. Because you all told me it would happen. As long as I don't drink, show up for meetings and stay active. Man, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah, so I'm from Pittsburgh. My sobriety date is October 16th, 2008. Yes, we just celebrated 5 years. That's incredible. That's a huge number to me. You know, 24 hours, you know, 1 month, 6 months, 1 year. 5 years, man. I just feel like I just walked into this program, to tell you the truth. I've been extremely blessed, man, because I didn't think this was possible. And I've learned so much. And I hope I remain the dumbest person in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because that means I'll remain teachable. So, you know, I'm in no hurry. You know, people I sponsor, my sponsor tells me, guess what, even the snails made it to Noah's Ark in time. So, I'm in no hurry. So, you know, I just kind of give you a little background. I enjoy doing this. To me, this is awesome. I know a couple things are going to happen up here. I'm going to laugh because I've done some really dumb things out there when I was drinking and in sobriety. I'm going to cry because I'm extremely grateful for the gift that's been given to me. And that's how I show my emotions. I'm not afraid to shed a tear, man, because I am eternally grateful. And I'm going to learn something new about myself. That's why I truly enjoy doing this. I'll give you a little background on one of the new breeds coming into these rooms. I'm Irish and I'm Catholic. There's very few of us in here. So I come from a big family. Alcoholism in my family is huge. On my mom's side, she came from 17 brothers and sisters. She lost 3 of her sisters due to this disease, her mom and dad. My mom's one of us, but she's just out there trudging away. My dad's side of the family, I didn't really know them. They all died young. I'm the oldest living male in my family. So, but, you know, growing up, you know, as I often hear from up here, I didn't fit in at all growing up. At all. Growing up, I came from a crazy family. I mean, we were loud. We were fighting, yelling, screaming. My mom was the type of alcoholic who laid on the couch and didn't move. I could never bring anybody home because my mom was always trashed and laying on the couch. And I was embarrassed. You know, I had 2 older sisters and 2 younger brothers, and I was the middle child, but the oldest boy. I come from an old school raising. My dad was in the Marine Corps for 20 plus years. And, you know, we didn't have a lot. I had to work at a young age to help support my family's income. Because, you know, we almost lost our house like 5 times sheriff's sales. At that point, you know, you don't got a lot of money. We struggled, but it was my responsibility as the oldest boy to help support the family. And I was very upset about that. I felt like my dad stole my childhood, because all I ever did was go to school, play sports, and work. That's it. And take care of my mom. Growing up, I had a big responsibility. I took care of my mom. I was her bartender. So at 6, 7, 8 years old, I was making my mom drinks. And that was my job, being the oldest boy. So when my mom's laying on the couch, she'd raise her glass. That was my cue to go make her a drink. And that's what I did. I took that job serious. It was pretty cool, man. I was a bartender at a young age. I thought it was pretty awesome. Along with this responsibility, as I got a little bit older, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old, we had a state store right down in Pennsylvania. We have state stores. Right down the road, there was a state store. So mom would phone it in. I would walk down with the money and go pick up her bottles and bring them back home. Nobody ever questioned me. And I was cutting grass, shoveling snow, so I was saving some money for myself, too. And I drank at a young age, and I tried it. I said, you know, Mom wants to add a fifth of Jim Beam. Well, and behold, it worked. All of a sudden, I was getting booze for me. So it was working. So, you know, growing up, like I said, I didn't fit in. My friends all went to a public school. I went to a Catholic school. You know, they all thought I had money. And we didn't. And, you know, the only time I ever fit in with people out there was sports. That's the only time you guys wanted me, you know. Everybody wanted me on their team because I was a very good athlete. Outside that, man, I really didn't have any friends because I didn't have time for friends. And, you know, growing up, I was a fighter. I fought over everything. I fought to show how tough I was, just to prove myself. If you didn't like me, I think we should fight. That's just the way it was. That's how I proved myself, that in sports. So, you know, going through, you know, school, I wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer. Matter of fact, I was probably one of the dumbest kids in the class because we had remedial vans out back for people who didn't read well or do anything. That was me. I was that kid going out in that van, learning how to read, how to write, and everything like that. But I was a really good athlete. In 83, 84, I qualified for the Olympic trials in 400 meters. Just show you what kind of an athlete I was. I was really good. But growing up, I was also the kid who always got caught. I got caught doing everything. You know, my dad used to race cars, and we used to go to the drag strips and stuff, and I learned how to drive at a young age, too. I was a chase car to go down after my dad's car, and then we'd haul back. So at a young age, I learned how to drive. So if my mom and dad went out when I was 13, 14 years old, I would take my dad's truck out and go pick up my buddies, and we'd go drink in the field. And, you know, because I could get served. I'd go to the state store and, you know, call in the order and get it. Matter of fact, there was a beer distributor next door, and I asked the guy at the state store, hey, do you mind, Mom wants to drink beer now. She wants to try beer, so could we get a quarter keg of, you know, we'll just say Bud Light. And he goes, oh, sure, I'll call next door. Sure enough, it worked. And, you know, my mom's drinking keg of beer, you know. Who'd have thunk, you know. We did buy a lot of booze, but it worked. So, you know, I was your go-to guy. Again, that got me into being popular and fitting in with everybody else because if you wanted to have a party, you called Matt because I could get the booze. So I got instant credibility. I was the man. I was very good at drinking, too. I was strong. I could drink with the older kids. I enjoyed it. I really did. So it was pretty cool. So anyways, get back to borrowing my dad's truck. That worked for a while. And one day, you know, my old man's a big guy, too. He was. He was like 6'5", 260, just a mammoth man. I came home one day. I would make little chalk marks where I knew to park the truck perfectly so Dad would not know I took his truck. Sure enough, man, I come home. Spotlights come on. This garage door comes flying open, and there's Mel. I mean, he's like, ah. And all my buddies are running, scampering. They left me hanging. I got my butt kicked. My dad crushed me. And I figured, okay, that's it. You know, I'm used to getting, you know, beat up and punched and stuff from my parents. I mean, no big deal. I took the medicine, except for when the police showed up at my house, and they put me in handcuffs. And I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? I'm just got a T.O. Why am I going to jail? And my dad said, well, let's talk about this. Let's see. Do you have a driver's license? No. Did you ask to use my truck? No. So you stole my truck and you don't have a driver's license. Why do you think you're going to jail? But that was one of my dad's lessons on teaching me what not to do. Because when I went to jail, of course, some of those cops were his buddies. For a weekend, they just played, let's kick the crap out of Mac in jail, try to teach him a lesson. And it did. It worked. I just took your cars and not my dad's cars anymore. But, yeah, stuff like that. You know, one time I had this great idea. They were building new homes at the top of our plan, and it was snowing outside. And, you know, who wants to drink outside when they got a half-built home and they got a basement? You know, I got gravel and some spare wood and some cardboard. So I said, you know, let's have a fire. So we had a nice little bonfire, nice, got keg going, put everything out, went home, and all of a sudden I see all these fire trucks going on top of the hill. Sure enough, it burned the damn house. You know, it was on fire. And then the cops, of course, where do they go? To my house. So my dad's out yelling with this officer, and they're getting into it. And my dad comes back at me, and I could just see those eyes like, oh, God, I'm dead. And I said, Dad, what did he want? He goes, what do you think they wanted? I said, I thought I put the fire out. He goes, what? And he goes, they came to yell at me for speeding around the neighborhood. You burned the house down? You know, it's just like stuff like that. I mean, it's hell to be honest. It really is. So it's stuff like that. I'm the kid who always got caught. But I'm also the kid who didn't care and had the, you know, it was all about me and I had a right to do stuff because, you know, in high school, you know, they knew I drank and I didn't care because I was a very good athlete and I brought a lot of fame and publicity to that school. And my dad also was trying to get me to stop from drinking because a lot of consequences were happening. He's like, dude, you can't drink. And I told my dad, yes, I can. You know why I can drink? Because you treat me like an adult. I'm helping you pay the mortgage as my other family members don't have to do squat. I mean, you're treating me like an adult, right? So screw you. I'm going to drink. I take care of Mom. I'm her bartender. And, you know, that's the kind of son I was. So I threw it right back in his face. And that's the first time I ever really saw tears in my dad's eyes because, you know, I told him he stole my childhood from me. So screw you. And, you know, when I was with my buddies in high school, I always had a pint of Jim Beam in my locker. As we go out and then they'd have a chew or a smoke, I'd have a Jim Beam. That was my smoke. That was my chew. I mean, I'm an athlete. I'm not going to smoke a chew. Come on, no. That's I'm a runner. So that's what I did. And I didn't care. So, you know, not being the sharpest knife in the drawer and being embarrassed about being, you know, smart and not too smart, I didn't think I'd be in college. But due to my athletic ability, a lot of schools were coming after me. But I also had a lot of consequences. So I thought, you know, a good place for me to be would go to the Marine Corps. The Marine Corps needs a guy like me. And they would probably straighten me out. And, you know, I could get my life together. So I told my dad that. And I was 17. I said, I want to go enlist in the Marine Corps. And my dad says, the Marine Corps don't want people like you. They want anything to do with a guy like you. And I'm like, what do you mean? Yeah, I'm in shape. I'm, you know. He's like, trust me. They don't want people like you. They don't need you. And I said, come on. He says, all right, come on. We'll go downtown. We'll go to the recruitment center. I want you to talk to these two guys. And they think it's a good idea. My God, I'll sign on the line. You can go have at it. So I said, all right, cool. So I walk down to a small little room and something like this. There's one chair there. And I go to sit down, and my dad's not coming out. I was like, Dad, you're not coming in? He goes, no. So there's these two mammoth guys. They're 6'5", and they're dress blues. And Marine Corps guys, you know, in those dress blues, I'm thinking, yeah, that's me. I'm going to look just like those guys. So I sit down. And these guys are pushing the table, pushing my chair, saying, who told you to sit down? So I stand up. Now they're pushing me because I stood up. Who told you to stand up? So I'm like, oh, my God. These guys, and they were bumping me and telling me that they're going to crush me. If I get into their platoon, they're going to PT me to death, and I'm a wimp. They don't want me. I was scared to death. So I walk out. Dad goes, hey, what do you want to do? I said, Dad, I want to go to college. That's the best place for me. No way I want to go to the Marine Corps. Well, you know, my dad actually set that up. Those were his buddies, you know. But my dad saw something. He knew I needed to go to college. So, you know, I told you I was a pretty good runner. But I really didn't have a lot of self-confidence. You know, I had schools like Arkansas, Florida, Texas, Michigan, Michigan State, UCLA, USC recruiting me. Division I schools. And, you know, my resume says I could go D1 no problem. But, see, I didn't see that in me. I didn't think I was good enough. I was scared to death. I didn't think I could hang with those guys. So I went to a small school, just a little north of Pittsburgh, called Slippery Rock University. And the Rock was a Division II school, and they were Division II champs in track for, you know, 5 years in a row. And I was there with my parents, and, you know, we went to visit the school, and Well, this totally sold me on Slippery Rock. It's some dude's running around. He goes, hey, did you see the current Playboy? I'm like, dude, my parents are right here. No, I did not see it. He goes, we're the number two party school in the nation. I'm thinking, oh, man, this is the school for me. I'll help you get the number one. Why wouldn't I come here? And it's a dry town. You guys rock. This is incredible. So, I took my SATs. I don't know if you guys took SATs down here, but I took them three times. My high score was like 670. They give you 400 for your name. I mean, I don't test well, and, So what I had to do was go to a summer school. All I had, again, you know where this is going. All I had to do was pass, like, five classes. I get my full ride. It's all good. I'm not there 48 hours. I run into a buddy of mine from my hometown. And he's like, and he's in a fraternity. He's in Theta Chi. He's like, dude, man, why don't you bring some of the football players? As a matter of fact, I'm in the dorm with all football players, basketball players, wrestlers, and I'm like the lone track guy. But it gave me popularity right away because I said, hey, I know somebody in a fraternity house who says we can come drink here for free and there'll be a ton of girls and we'll have a great time. And we did, man. We went there. It was everything I thought college should be about. And we were rocking and rolling and having a great time. And they liked us so much they asked us to come back the next day. But the next day, they charged us all $3 to come. I'm thinking, $3? It was free yesterday. And the girls get in for free. That's not right. But we were getting a little wild, and they asked us to leave. And we didn't think we should leave, so we beat them all up. And we took their cold plate. We took their kegs. We took everything out of their fraternity house back to our dorm. We thought that was hilarious. And so we saw all these red and blue lights going along the campus, and we're like, man, where are these guys coming to? Yeah, I got arrested. So I was in there 48 hours. The dean of academics, the AD came down, my track coach. They grabbed 15 of us and said, we don't want athletes like you here. Get out of our school. Call your parents. You're gone. You're all out of here. Get out of here. I'm like, oh, my God. Not only am I scared, my dad's going to kill me. And so I called my dad. He's like, dude, you better not be calling for money because, you know, I don't have any. I said, no, Dad, I got kicked out. And it's the first time I really heard my dad, like, cry. And he's like, that's it, Marine Corps, man. You're going to die. You're going to wish you had the one opportunity that me, your mom, never had. Nobody in my family ever went to college. That was the first one, and I screwed it up. So we had a meeting that Monday with the dean of academics and the hearing board. And for 13 of us, they gave us a second chance because we called our parents. They said we showed some character. That's all I know, man. And the rest is kind of history. College was really tough for me. School was not good. I struggled. I tried the best I could. I did graduate. I did join a fraternity. They were going to throw me off the track team for doing that, but, you know, I told them I deserved it because, you know, up there I set a lot of records. And I was an All-American, and I brought other recruits there. And, you know, that self-entitlement, you know, I'm the best. And my second or third junior year, I forget which one, I was 5 years, 6 summers up there. So I had a surgery on my knee, arthroscopic. Back then, you were on crutches for 2 months, and then you just rehab. And I should have came back bigger, badder than ever. Honestly, I should have came back twice as good. But this is where drinking took over. I gained 30 pounds in about 2.5-3 months because all I did was drink and eat. That's it. Alcohol became my first love, so I walked away from my track career. I walked away from being the one thing that made me happy and really, really good. Man. I mean, I just threw it all away. And nobody could believe it. But they saw something in me that I did, and they asked me to still stay on the team. They kept me on as a coach because I couldn't afford to go to college. And they still kept my scholarship. I owe them everything. So I did graduate. I got a great job. So I worked for a company called Lipton Iced Tea. I did real well. I'm a good salesperson. If you can't tell, if I couldn't speak, God didn't give me a bullshit, I'd be unemployable. Let's just face it. I couldn't do anything. But I did really well. And then after 3 years, they put me into management. I don't know why they thought I'd be a good manager because I was a good sales rep. But they put me up in the upper management. Now, growing up, all I ever seen in management was they all had bars, didn't they? I mean, back then, in them old shows, everybody had a bar. So that's the first thing I did. I went out and bought a bar in my office, filled it up with booze and everything. It was awesome. I had two receptionists. I had 6 divisional managers and, 92 reps underneath me. It was awesome. We broke all kind of records our first year. You know how many times, how many days I came into the office out of that first year? I think 30 days. Oh, that's it. All I did was I drank and I played golf, and I thought I was Mr. Everybody. And after that, the vice president came in, and I thought, man, I'm getting promoted already. So they came in, and they asked me to open up my computer. I told them I didn't know how to do that because I had my receptionist and everything do all that for me, my secretaries. And they did my job, and so did my divisional managers. And basically, they came in and they fired me. And I was like, what? So I do what I do best. I get mad. I throw the phone at the dude. And that was not a good idea because he says, well, let's call the police now. And I'm like, oh, no, you're right. I'm fired. I'm out here. So I left. But, you know, we're smart people. We're very creative. So I figured I might as well take a couple months off and get myself, you know, reorganized. So I didn't do too much but party. And then I got into a pharmaceutical company, and I got the job right away. But all I had to do was show a current pay stub, and I could sign. Now, I told you, I hadn't been working for 4 months. So what I did was I said to the guy, I said, well, my pay stub's with my accountant. I'm 24 years old. I got an accountant? Come on. You know, I'm just out of college. I couldn't probably spell it. You know, so I said, if you give me time, I'll go get it, and I'll bring you a copy of it. He goes, sure, that works for me. So I went home, found my last pay stub, altered the date, made a Xerox copy, and handed him the copy. He goes, well, where's the original? I said, well, where else? With my accountant. I don't want to lose it. This should work fine. It's a copy, right? And he goes, yeah, that'll work. I got hired. I mean, and I was in pharmaceutical for 15 years, and being a drunk like me, I did the best job ever because it's all entertaining. I took doctors golf in, restaurants, because once I get you out of your office and I get you into my environment, which is drinking and social, I own you. I own you. You're done. There's nothing you can do because you're on my turf. I control that turf. In your office, I don't control that. I'm not very good in there. Matter of fact, I'm not that smart. But I don't want you to know that, so I'll get to know you personally. I'll buy you things. We'll have fun. And that was a great job. I was really good at it. I was so good at it, they made me the regional trainer. And what I used to do then is go out and help people who were struggling on the sales team. So Uncle Mac would work with you for 2 or 3 days and find out what's wrong. So what I would do is work with you for a half a day, meet you at an Applebee's or Whole Hands for lunch, because, you know, it's very stressful working with me. And kind of, you know, we'll start drinking beers and start partying so I can figure out what's wrong. And then the next 2 days, all I would tell you is just tell me where you went, the doctor you saw. I'll fake a trip report. You don't say nothing, I don't say nothing, and I guarantee you'll get a high score and you can hold on to your job. That was awesome. Until one girl ratted me out and said that I did not work with her. So they demoted me back down to a sales rep. And wouldn't you know it, that girl turned out to be my boss 6 months later. And she goes, you know what we're going to do? We're going to work this whole week together. I said, no, we're not. I said, do you know who I am? I'm number one or two on the totem pole. You ain't working with me. I said, if you don't like it, I'll call the vice president. I called the vice president of the company. I said, this girl isn't working with me. If she is, then I quit. How do you like that? And we had a meeting 2 days later. You know what they did? They fired me. Now, this company wanted to get rid of me real bad because they gave me a year severance pay, plus 6 months unemployment, plus health benefits for a full year. I mean, they really wanted to get rid of me. They were willing to make a deal with me. So I did what I do best, man. I went on a six-month vacation. That's as long as the money lasted. And I took one of my buddies with me. So I lived in Florida. I went to Vegas. I went to California. I mean, I partied like a rock star. I went to an All-Star game, went to the Super Bowl, Stanley Cup game. I mean, I partied. And the one thing though that I left behind was a wife and 2 kids who I never kept in contact with. So, yeah, right now it sounds like I was just having some fun and, you know, life is good. But there were some serious consequences that I went through. When I first started with this company back in 1990, I kept getting the calls. You know how our family likes to call us at the bars, or at least my family, you know, to bug me, check up on me. Hey, is Mac there? Is Mac there? And I'm like, not here. Well, I did that for about 7 hours. I was hiding from my family. And the reason why they were trying to call me is that my dad had passed away and he was at the hospital and they needed me to identify him. And my mom could not do it alone. She couldn't do it. So my mom's been trying to call me, and then one of my buddies knew the bar I was at, come running in and said, "Mac, you need to get to McKeesport Hospital. Your dad's dead." I'm like, "What?" "Yeah, your mom's been waiting for you for 7 hours. She can't do it. She can't go in and see him. She needs your help." And I was like, "Oh, my God." So, you know, I get down there. There's my mom crying, saying, "You know, where have you been? Why couldn't you just pick up the phone? Why?" Because I thought she was bothering me. And then, you know, that was tough. And then I had to get his funeral together. And then I got so drunk when we pulled my dad out of the casket to go into the church. I was so drunk, I stumbled. My dad's a big guy. So I dropped him, which means the whole casket dropped. And you're like, boom. And I'm making a joke out of him, saying, "Oh, I bet dad thinks this is great, man. We dropped him." You know, I do stuff like that. Then 3 months later, it should be a great honor to give my sister away, one of my sisters away, to fill in for my dad. But I was so drunk, when I went to pull her veil back, I pulled it off her head. And then I fell back into the pew, and you can see it on tape, me at my finest moments, doing stuff like that. Then my middle brother asked me to be his best man. He lives in Charleston, South Carolina. And they told me there would be no alcohol at this reception. I said, "What the heck is that? No alcohol at a reception? I ain't coming." But I'm his best man. So me and mom got drunk in the car. And then we went in. And then we were so drunk, we had a lot of curse. We bought booze in there. And I started mouthing off, and I got thrown out. My brother threw me out of this reception. And then my youngest brother asked me to be his best man. And up north, we have bridal dance. And when you have bridal dance, you do a shot. Well, I did a shot with each and every one of you. And the more I drink, the more fired up I get. You know, I get very excited. And, yeah, you know, let's go. And everybody's like, "Dude, you got to calm down." I said, "I ain't got to do nothing. I'm out of here." So I left. So then what I did is I ran down to a bar that was like 2 miles away, and I got a six-pack. And I knew that six-pack would last me to the next bar, where I could get 2 six-packs to get to the next bar. And this is where the police report comes in. I was walking down a four-lane road, right down the middle, two lanes going this way. As I was getting done with my beer bottles, I'm banging them off of cars, daring people to fight me. I mean, boom. So these three guys jumped me, and they turned out to be, obviously, law enforcement guys, and we were going at it pretty good. But this one dude stepped in, who is a was still in the Airborne Rangers. He also is highly trained behind the line, self-defense recon guy. Also been DEA for 20 years, and I really wanted to get this son of a gun because I don't like this guy. So I broke one of the beer bottles and I tried to split his throat. And this guy hit me with one punch, knocked me out, shattered my face, and I fell face down on the pavement. And at that point, I quit breathing. I was gone. I was done. This guy worked on me until the paramedics got there. This guy was my brother. I tried to kill my brother. Turns out that I almost died. I had so much alcohol in me, they had to wait 2 days to operate on my face, and it took 15 hours to reconstruct my face. I used to be a lot uglier, but, my brother and I hadn't talked for 25 years. Almost 25 years since that incident. And I went down there 2 years ago. And thanks to this program, I got a relationship. I have 6 nephews and nieces I've never met. All they knew me as the wild, crazy uncle. You know. But, it's stuff like that happens to me when I'm out there. And then finally, I lost that other pharmaceutical job. I lost a lot. I've been fired from every one of my jobs because of alcohol. Every single one of them. I've had some great jobs. And then I got another. You know how I forged that pay stub from that one pharmaceutical company? I did it again, and it worked. Again. I mean, it's unbelievable. I did it for another pharmaceutical job, but this guy was on to me. He knew me. And he was sitting out in front of my house saying, the way I drank, I couldn't answer the bell. I drank so hard, I mean, I felt like crap. There's no way I can answer the bell. I just couldn't do it. And before I got fired, I told him I had a drinking problem. I called HR to get the heat off, and then I went into rehab. So I went inpatient, outpatient, and, And I had every intentions in staying in these rooms. I really did. I really did. You know, I lasted 9 months. But the guilt and shame, I believe, because I couldn't find a God in my understanding because of my religion before, because I did some really, really God-awful, horrible things out there that, you know, I'm not going to say from this podium, but I'm a bad person. I'm a very, very bad person. I mean, I'm a mean person. I mean, I will punch. I will do anything to anybody. I mean, I don't care back then. I mean, I really wanted to quit, but it took me 4 years to get back into these rooms. See, I went back out and it got worse. I mean, I've never heard anybody say, oh man, he got so much better. I mean, he got really bad. I started living in a cemetery because that was by choice. Because dying was better than living. I couldn't stand me anymore. I hated myself and I didn't have enough courage to pull the trigger to end it. See, I've made promises to my kids. I'd come home. I meant to come home. I really wanted to go home, but I couldn't pass the bars. I couldn't do it. I mean, I tried everything. I made every promise, and I had great intentions. I couldn't do it. Once I started drinking, I can't stop. And it got so bad that I had a drink in the morning. I had a drink at lunch. I had a drink at night. I just had a drink to survive. I had to. Because in rehab, my fifth day in detox, I had a heart attack due to alcohol withdrawal. And the cardiologist who did my cath, they go on and look at your heart, and I know this guy really well, was like, you know, Mac, this is not your first heart attack. Look at that. This might be your third or fourth, dude. You may want to think about changing your life. And I'm like, yeah, I swear to God I am. I'm going to do that. And I had every intentions on doing it. But that one thing, I could not find a God in my understanding because I figured I'm going to hell no matter what. And you know what? Somebody may knock on my door someday. And I may have to go. But that's okay. I understand that. I will accept my consequences. But I've been blessed so far that no one has done that yet. Yeah. But, you know, when I got back into these rooms, it was because of a young angel, my son. He was 12 years old. I came home like I always did, mean, drunk, hating the world. My son picked up a phone, had a knife in one hand. He says, I'm calling the police, Dad. We don't need a drunk like you here. And I did what I did best. I ran. I went on a 3-day bender. I don't know. I've been 5-day. I don't know. But then when I came home, I was willing to do anything. I didn't care. I was going to die trying to stay sober. And I told my wife, get the kids out of here because it's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be. And it wasn't. I screamed. I yelled. I cried. Sometimes I made it to the bathroom. Sometimes I didn't. And I hope I never, ever forget that. Because it was horrible. It was bad. But, you know, scary thing is you guys, man. My old sponsor, who I hadn't talked to in 4 years, I called him. He picked up on the third ring. He goes, hey, Mac, how you doing? He still had my number. And I said, look, I need help. And he goes, fine, I'll come see you. I said, no, can I come see you? So I went to see him, and I went over to his house. And he said, look, just sit there on the couch, just relax. And you know what happened? I fell asleep for 3 hours. I felt peace. I literally slept. And that's what I needed to do. So then he asked me, you know what? Here's what we're going to do. Don't drink, go to meetings. That's what I want you to do. Forget about your family. Forget about everything. Don't drink, go to meetings. And that's what I did. And damn it, it was hard. It was real hard because I shook. Oh, God. I mean, I shook for the first 6 months. I mean, when I came back out on the road 6 months later, I was in Gainesville going to Hulk Club. You know, I drank on the road. Damn right I'm going to go to meetings on the road. I needed you guys. I needed you guys bad, and you could see that. I got a home group. And in a home group, at our meetings, they sell the 50-50. We give away books and stuff like that. And they gave me that job. And then from then, I became the secretary of my home group. See, I lost all confidence in myself. 5 years and 1 month ago, I could not stand up here and talk to you guys. I'd be too embarrassed, too shy. I couldn't say two words. I couldn't do it. I had no self-confidence whatsoever. I couldn't do this. And I'm in sales. See, I could never do it without a drink or anything. And today, I can do that. And then you all kept saying to me, keep coming back, Mac. Hang in there. And you really meant it. You could say, dude, you're doing good. Just keep coming back. Just keep coming back. Then I met a lot of friends. You know? Then I started sponsoring people. Then I got into service work. I got into area service work. See, Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to live life and handle situations that I could never handle before. And, you know, just like my son stabbing me. My son stabbed me 3 times already. I mean, he's put my head through the walls. You know, he just started calling me dad 1 year ago. You know? But see, I have hope. He may not, you know, he may never call me dad, but you guys give me hope that he might. And you know what? And he does. And I have a princess. My daughter, she's my number one advocate, man. She comes to meetings with me. I mean, she's so protective of my alcoholism. It's incredible. I mean, we got a restaurant. She's like, make sure there's no alcohol in that. Dad, just look at the, I mean, the desserts, everything. I mean, she's on it. You know, for my 5th year anniversary, she wrote me a cute card. And she's just like her dad because she misspelled some words. And, you know, God bless her. I mean, oh, I love her. And I love my son, too. But, you know, she just basically said that she is so proud of me. And she's seen how far I have come. And what the dad I have become. I'm reliable, dependable, accountable. She wrote that in there. It was cards to me. I've never been dependable, accountable for anything. You know, it scares me. I just came on vacation with my family. We went to D.C. I ran the Marine Corps Marathon. And my son asked me to take him to Georgetown, just me and him. I got scared. I called my sponsor. I didn't know what to do. I've never done anything alone with my son. I don't know how to do that. I've never done it. And I didn't know what to do. He said, don't worry, just go. And everything will work out. And I tell you what, man, it was quiet. I was like, dude, you want to listen to your music so I can hear it too? And, you know, I was nervous, man. I was scared. But I'm his dad. You think that would come normal? But I've never been a dad before. I've never been alone with him before. And it was like the coolest, awkward moment of my whole life. You know, it was like my trying to hold a girl's hand for the first time and try to get a kiss. I mean, but it worked out, man. It worked out. And that's after I came down here 6 months ago thinking he'd never talk to me again. He called me everything but dad. I mean, we started with the old person and then, you know, it just went on from there. And, you know, if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't have the life I have today. I wouldn't have this smile. I mean, life still kicks my ass. Don't get me wrong. It's kicking the living crap out of it. I mean, I'm also honored today, too, because there's some business people here that I do business with that are in the room today to hear my lead, who came down to listen to me. How cool is that? 2 drunks doing business together. I mean, man, we're strong. We're solid. I mean, you guys have helped me so much. I mean, I don't know what I do, honestly, because I'm just learning how to live, how to be anything. I mean, we have the Mac McSheehy rule at work. I miss like 30 days. Now you can only miss 10. I mean, I haven't missed a day of work in 5 years, except for when I was in the hospital for something. But, you know, outside that, that's it. So I am so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous and to each and every one of you. And all I can ask you is please keep coming back because I need you. I truly do. A guy like me who's on the road all the time, I'm on the road 3 weeks out of the month, I really need you guys. So, you know, with that, thank you, Tim. Thanks for having me wherever you are.
Hey, Mac, keep coming back.
My name is Ray. It's 3 weeks today since I had my last drink. Live and let live, let go and let God. Before you give in, stop and think. Everyone tells me it's gonna get better. If only they'd tell me when. A day at a time, I'm learning to live again. I had a good wife, a wonderful life, but the bottle took it away. Now here I stand, a piece of a man, searching for something to say. And everyone tells me, easy does it, but what do I do till then? A day at a time, I'm learning to live again. Learning to open up my heart and say what I feel inside. Learning to laugh at the little things, never forgetting I've cried. That's all I got, so thanks a lot for giving me a chance to share. It's sure good to know there's a place I can go where the people really do care. And everyone tells me just keep coming back, try to hang on to them. A day at a time, I'm learning to live again. A day at a time, I'm learning to live again.